It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco and Renee Richier here. We're going to talk about all the latest rumors. Apple TV, manufacturer in the U.S. What was with the Mac Pro? And why you may not want to follow Apple Maps in Australia. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 329, recorded December 11th, 2012. Nobody died yet. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak12. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continual, unlimited backup for your computer files, only $59 a year. Try it free at carbonite.com and use the offer code MacBreak to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/MacBreak and get a copy of Brandon Sanderson's Legion absolutely free at audible.com/Sanderson. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers your Apple needs each and every week with the great Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times joining us via Skype that is currently trying to cooperate.
It aims to try. It aims to please, but it aims to at least give the impression that if you give it another 5 minutes, it'll sell well.
It's doing its best. You're interlaced now. I've never seen Skype do interlacing before. It's always an adventure with Skype.
I'm like a locally produced carpet commercial.
You're watching
TV, you're watching sports, right. And it goes from beautiful like 1080p exactly. HD down to like VHS. Yeah.
Just we have to put seconds. A frame around you. Because you're not fully now, and then contrast that with a man coming to us from Canada, Renee Richie of iMore. He's fully anamorphic, but he has no audio. So it works out that way. What's going on? Hello?
I have no audio.
Oh, no, you sound good. It was Chad. Chad forgot to push your button.
I muted Skype 1 instead of Skype 2.
Ah, good to see you, Renee.
You too. I have a fresh steaming mug of apple Kool-Aid to help me through the show today.
Yeah, look, that's beautiful. So the apple Kool-Aid comes in an apple mug now.
It does. Well, if you get it at the company store, it does.
You sound like me. I'm a little, I don't know why, I'm a little hoarse.
I have the bronchitis.
Yeah, I think I do too. How are you feeling, Andy?
I am tip-top ship-shape. I've had a glass of vitamin C only 4 days ago, so I'm being healthy.
You're immunized.
Exactly. Sideburns are not the only thing he shares with Wolverine.
We told you that this was going to happen last week. Now it happened. Tim Cook did the Brian Williams interview on Rock Center on Thursday. He also did Bloomberg Businessweek, a few other. They're trotting him around. I'm surprised they didn't call us. Mr. Cook would like an interview. Okay. But no,
that's
they didn't.
When you know, regime change has happened.
Yeah, really. Well, I can't. I guess Steve Jobs would handle all of that, and sometimes he would give interviews, but not so publicly. This is the first time in a long time an Apple CEO has, you know, been so available.
Yeah, especially when it's like not really attached to anything either. Now, granted,
I know what he's attached to. He's attached to the plunging Apple stock price.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't it horrible? It's only up to like the high 600s.
540. No, it's 545 right okay, now, but it is up $15 today. Yeah. So it's come back a little bit. It's been a little volatile though. They plunged from let's see, it looks like the high point in the last month was about 590 down to 525. So it's kind of in the middle right now. Why?
Well, I think the other thing is that this is probably the first time that Tim Cook could have this is the start of the zone in which Tim is now, I think, really, really used to handling this kind of a public sort of event.
Right.
Whereas it's not as though, I mean, you don't get to the level he was at 2 years ago without being a little bit savvy about how to handle the media. But it's one thing when you are able to handle a network news anchor basically talking and walking with you for hours at a time and not even betraying the slightest thing. I mean, he didn't really say anything of real importance. The most valuable stuff is just the usual stuff. Here's the philosophy of the company. Here's what we take seriously. It was big, big news. The fact that it wasn't wonderful that the day after everybody was dissecting. Oh, wait a minute. He mentioned yeah. Apple TV, but he didn't refer to it as a hobby. He referred to it as, and I quote, an area of intense interest. but of course, before that and after that, there was, you know, no, I'm sorry, I know you're NBC, but I'm not even going to hint at the idea that we're going to be doing anything in that space anytime in the next 10 years. But it really is a case of him finally being there at the front doorstep and being able to talk about such things.
Yeah, because if
things.
The goal was to reassure investors, the stock price didn't change at all in the few days since then. It's still, you know, hovering around mid-500s. Down from a peak of 700. I mean, it's not an insignificant drop.
But how long has the slide been going on? I mean, an interview like this, I have no familiarity with what was going on inside of Apple, but I've heard stories from people who are arranging such interviews with CEOs at that level, and usually those discussions, it really is like a truce agreement between North and South Korea in 1953, 1954. I mean, it's two people at teams of people at tables discussing, here's what you're going to talk about, here's what you're not going to talk about. The network saying, well, look, if you're not going to give us anything, there's no reason for us to go there. Well, we didn't say that. We said that you're going to, you know, we want long shots of our CEO strolling in a bucolic campus setting. Well, happy workers go to and fro. Will you give us that? Okay, we'll give you that. It's not the sort of thing where the stock starts to take a dump,
it's not overnight.
Let's start calling networks.
No, you're right.
It was also perfect timing. I mean, Apple PR is nothing if not masters of timing, and all Apple's products had shipped for the year, so there was no danger of him saying anything that would be close to a launch. And it's also far enough ahead of a product cycle that he's not going to hint at anything big. And it's their major quarter, so the sales won't be, you know, they'll have good news when the quarter ends, regardless of what he does on this interview.
So let's talk about the Apple TV thing, because a lot of people said, oh, it confirms there's going to be an Apple TV. It didn't seem like it even was close to that. I think I'll tell you what I think he was talking about. I think a much upgraded Apple TV, you know, Pocky Puck Apple TV that replaces your cable set-top box. He said, when I go in the living room and sit down, it's like I'm going back 30 years. Yeah. And, you know, an area of intense interest. I think an improved Apple TV. I can't see a TV set.
Me neither. I've never really understood that. That doesn't mean that it can't happen. It means that I've yet to see any argument that says why they would want to do this as an all-in-one. Right. But again, the main takeaway I took away from that is that I think it was part of the story of, we like to take things that don't work well and make them work better. This is really an interview that could have aired last year, and I bet it can air this without much change next year. Because it really is just a parry around specifics when talk about the generalities of what makes Apple Apple. But yeah, I agree. I still don't see why Apple would want to develop one specific set.
What do you think about my idea? They make deals with the problem, of course, is not Apple or HBO. The problem is the cable companies and the networks, who are very afraid of this idea of selling stuff a la carte. But it's what consumers want. Consumers want to be able to turn on a box and say, I want Three and a Half Men, and then I want to follow it with Game of Thrones, and I don't want to worry about anything else. And you can bill me or whatever, but I don't want to worry about anything else. And the cable companies hate that idea because, well, they make less money because they sell us a lot of stuff we don't need because they don't sell a la carte. Right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I'm not sure how much of it is a hardware problem and how much is a software problem. I mean, granted, I've had the same Scientific Atlanta cable box from my cable company for the last 10 years. I've gone from a Trio 650 to an iPhone 5, and my cable box has not changed at all. But I think you're right, Leo. I think an Apple TV box that's maybe not too different, maybe it has to be a little bit more powerful, but if Apple can broker content deals where instead of an app store, they have a sort of a channel store, and you get the Hulu channel and the ABC channel and all those channels, it won't be the same as an app store, but it will give you access to a la carte programming from these people in a way that they still feel comfortable and still feel like they have a modicum of control.
But the thing is, I mean, anyone who's tried to watch Comic Book Men or on AMC, every 45 seconds says, "Do you? Sorry, Comcast subscribers, or sorry, DirecTV
subscribers."
Isn't
that annoying? Yeah,
I mean, the cable companies have always been made it very, very clear that we will. If you think you're going to disrupt our business, we could disrupt the good luck sending kids on bicycles door to door to deliver your programs to each of these people, because you ain't going to be able to get your content on our cable system.
Exactly right. I'm completely comfortable blaming them entirely. I think if you're a content creator, you'd love to sell directly to your customers, eliminate the middleman, make more money.
And another thing, why is Comedy Central HD a premium channel, but the regular Comedy Channel, that just makes no sense.
Yeah, another thing.
So yes, there isn't a lot of goodwill in reserve for the cable companies. But that's just to wind it up. I mean, that's always been the biggest problem with disrupting TV. Apple can build great hardware. Apple can build great software. What they can't necessarily do is deliver a package that will be of benefit to HBO, to Turner Classic Movies, to Comedy Central, to all these different people, and also not step on the toes of Comcast and Verizon and all these other companies. I mean, it's individual shows have a better chance of breaking through that way than actual channels, as we've seen with having all these individual show apps for the Conan O'Brien show, for the Daily Show, for the Colbert Report. But I'm not sure if the majority of people want to get their shows that way. I think they like specific shows, but they like the idea of, I've got HBO, I'm spending $6 a month, I have access to it, and also can search for any show I want through the same interface that lets me to search through every other show I want.
Right.
So it's a complex bunch of business dealings. If any company can cut through it, it's Apple, but it is a serious, serious problem.
If you guys remember that interview with Steve Jobs at the D conference a few years ago, and he spoke exactly about the go-to-market problem, where dealing with AT&T, back then Singular, was hard enough just to launch the iPhone, but dealing with all the regional fiefdoms that are cable companies and have rights to different movies at different times, different TV shows, control over different areas, becomes a go-to-market nightmare. And it's absolutely possible that Apple is working on this. Apple could have a display. The original Apple TV rumor was when the 27-inch iMac was introduced. So they know how to make panels. They know how to make little boxes. But they don't have control of that content, and you need to be able to feed that pipe.
There's a great blog post from Jean-Louis Gasset on his Monday Net. I love, you know, Jean-Louis, former Apple president. He created BOS. He's kind of the classic guy on the sideline, you know, the Monday morning quarterback. But in fact, that's why it's probably called the Monday Note. But he writes, the enduring Apple TV fantasy. He quotes Gene Munster, who for the third year in a row says, there will be an Apple TV in 2013. Quote, it will be the biggest thing in consumer electronics since the smartphone, says Munster. Then he says, let's take a calmer look at Tim Cook's words. And he gives you, he says, I don't believe Apple will make or even wants to make a TV set. It just can't be updated fast enough. So why is Tim Cook talking about Apple TV? Simplest explanation is he's answering an interviewer's question, but a cheekier possibility, I like this one, is that it's a head fake. Cook, a noted college football fan, War Eagle, is trying to draw Google offsides to provoke them into yet another embarrassing Google TV moment and maybe even goad Microsoft into another web TV dud. He says this is amusing but not likely, and I agree. I don't think that Apple does that kind of thing. A more serious interpretation is that he's indicating he'll continue to invest talent and money until the TV obstacles are finally surmounted. In other words, join us and ride the wave that will sweep away the competition. That's possible also. I mean, they're fighting up an uphill battle, obviously, as you talked about.
If they want to own the user experience, they have to have, when you turn on that television, it has to be an Apple interface that greets you. That's the battle for input zero being the base experience of the device. And again, Guy English had a really good post on this a couple of years ago where he said you can have the panel and control input zero, and then you can have the little hockey puck that you can upgrade every year. And because it's a panel, you know, it's going to last a long time. You upgrade the hockey puck, and then everyone else is suddenly fighting for the second connection, whether it's Xbox or whether it's a cable box.
Right. Somebody in the chat room pointed out that Google is selling off the Motorola set-top box part of Motorola. What if Apple bought that?
Yeah. I don't think they want to be the endpoint for a cable company. I think they want to be.
Yes.
I think they want their connection to be an internet connection, not a cable connection.
Right.
But they. I mean, it's this is a situation. I do think it's a situation where it's going to get a little bit more serious in the next year or two, because you know Xbox has been a really interesting partner, a really interesting player in living room computing right now, where I think most people still think of it as a game console, but the amount of content that it delivers into the living room is just staggering. And now that they have their Glass application on their on all Microsoft devices, these nice little tablet apps that enhance the digital content that you're actually watching live, that's a really interesting development. I mean, it makes me remember how iPod seemed like such a really weird name for Apple to put a music player. Why not call the iMusic or the iPlay or something like that? And it didn't take long before we realized that, oh, it's because they have this brand that is going to be used as a container for all kinds of things, not just music. They want to use it as they want to associate with this pocket entertainment device that could do things other than just to serve music. And now you look at Xbox. Well, it doesn't necessarily say it's a game console inside that name there. It is the Xbox. It is this box you have in your living room that delivers all kinds of entertainment that is not antenna based, that's not cable TV based. And if you do happen to have cable TV in your living room, if you're one of those hoity-toity people, it will actually enhance that content as well. So Apple has plenty of time to work this out. But if Microsoft keeps making these incremental improvements to what Xbox has been doing, they've never had that one little leap off and fly moment where suddenly everybody's talking about the Xbox is the future of anything. But every year it gets better and better, cleaner and cleaner, more and more features. And there might be a time in which Apple's going to be scrambling to do anything that's even comparable on Apple TV.
I agree. Actually, going back to the beginning, to the Bill Gates era of Xbox, it was, you know, and this is, I've been watching this for 20 years, and it was always my opinion that Microsoft wanted to be in the set-top box business. That's why they did web TV. And then what happened, and I think this was pretty well known at the time, is the cable company said, you're crazy because it's too expensive. We don't need that much processor. We don't want that much processor. We want something we can rent for $5 a month. As Gassay said, there's no incentive for improving the set-top box. So Microsoft faced a stone wall, and so what they did is an end around. They made the Xbox, and I always considered the Xbox not just about gaming, but as a stealth way into the living room for Microsoft. And ultimately, I think they want it to be a set-top box, and it's pretty clear. I agree with you, Andy. I think they would have liked to have had that watershed moment, but they're content with incremental improvement. That's all Apple's going to get. Here's another competitor. Gassay points out that Sony might proved to be a big competitor here. Now, Sony's really been the also-ran for the last few years. But, you know, they have that 4K TV that they're showing, $35,000. Or, I'm sorry, $25,000. But it is an 80-inch 4K television. It comes with a server. Because nobody's putting out 4K content, it actually comes with a box with full-resolution movies. Sony has a movie studio, remember, with a lot of movies, a big movie library. He says, could this portend an Apple-Sony alliance? The two companies have worked well together in the past. A CEO-level conversation could easily happen. Perhaps the Apple TV box could become the server for a 4K TV. That's an interesting thought. Certainly, you and I and a lot of us would like it if the price could get a little bit more affordable.
Yeah. Apple's historically really patient, though. I mean, like they weren't the first to cell phones by any stretch of the imagination. They weren't the first to tablets. They were sort of content to let a lot of people try and see what worked and what didn't work. And that seems to be Tim Cook's line with the Apple TV, too. They're just pulling that thread and seeing where it goes.
Yeah.
And with Sony, I think that they would still want to be in control of their own experience. They don't seem to partner nicely with others unless it's as a value add to their core problem solution or their core disruption.
The other thing worth mentioning, I think, is that remember that when the first iPhone came out, it was missing a lot of stuff. You know, it didn't have 3G, didn't have apps, didn't have cut and paste. Apple put that on the market because they felt as though the time is now, the iron is hot. Here is the opportunity right here. So long as we deliver the limited features as well as we can possibly, as well as we can imagine them, this is going to kill, this is going to really create a big splash. I think that if they thought that the market for a box like this were ripe right now, they would have done it by now.
Yeah.
I think part of it is that they're waiting for that one little cue, that one little whiff of scent in the air that says, okay, we got to, we're going to go with what we have right now because this is the time to start the launch process.
It's really obvious, though, from the amount of time we've spent on it, the amount of editorial that's the Jujine monster, that there is from the Apple fan base this intense interest in what Apple could do with television, which tells me that people think that they could be improved considerably.
Mm. That's also a little bit of the what's next thing. I mean, we got the phone and immediately we wanted the tablet. We got the tablet and immediately we want the television. And Wall Street's the same way. Apple is absurdly profitable when you look at Amazon or Microsoft or even Google in some ways. And yet when you look at analysts, they're like, oh, we're deeply concerned about what Apple's next $100 billion business will be. It's like Apple exists in a completely different universe or is being watched on a different channel than a lot of the other big tech companies.
Well, but there is. I'll play devil's advocate kind of intentionally here. The flip side of that argument is that companies don't. Apple's competitors don't stay dumb forever. Where they're not. They don't come from out of the blue with this killer product that absolutely changes the world. But they will. A year later, they'll come out with something that's kind of interesting, and it'll get better and better until you wind up in a situation where you'll have a lot of people saying, "Yeah, the Apple thing is really, really hot, but here's this other thing that I actually want. This I really want a tablet that's blue, and Apple only offers these in black and white, and I really can't tell the difference between these three. So I'll buy the blue tablet for $50 less." I think part of Apple's business has to be to make sure that they always stay a little bit ahead of everybody else and keep finding market spaces that no one else is really doing a good job in. So it's not, again, it's stupid to think about Apple as being in trouble anytime in the next several years. But you do know that I think in 5 years' time, they have to have a product they have not produced before. And we're not talking about the iPhone 8 instead of the iPhone 5. We're talking about the difference between the iPhone and the iPod.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen from Apple, but it's to me, the thing that I take away from all of this is people want something better. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, it's funny how quickly we absorbed HDTV. I think there was a pass on a 3D. And I think the question is what's next. And I think it's pretty clear to me 4 or even 8K is where to go. And here's the key. The cable companies and the satellite companies do not want to send us 8K or 4K content. So there's an opportunity, I think.
Yeah. But there's a difference, though. Remember that HD was one of the easiest things for people to adopt because you see that big 80-pound console that was going to kill your children if you didn't put it on the right kind of a stand? Yeah. We're going to replace it with a device. Instead of a 25-inch screen that weighs 50 pounds, here is a 40-inch screen that weighs about 12 pounds. It's flat. It's beautiful. You'll be able to unplug it from whatever you've got the old TV plugged into right now, plug it into this thing, and many of these channels are going to be like watching a moving photograph as opposed to old standard definition. You didn't have to ask anybody to change their habits. It was what you're giving them is exactly what they've got now, only better.
It's a Jessica Rabbit moment where the eyeballs go boing boing.
Yes, exactly.
Look at this. Have you seen Red Ray? So Red has announced. Red is the company that makes the 4K cameras, and they've really Red kind of exploded 4K onto the scene. They are planning a 4K player that you can buy. And you need that because it's not going to fit on Blu-ray. Now, I don't know what the prices will be on this thing. Let's look at the tech specs, though. I probably shouldn't look at the tech specs. It's things like how the temperature. We'll have HDMI out, so it'll work if you 7.1 sound. But of course, you'll want a 4K display. What's interesting is we're getting 4K displays. People don't realize this, but many times a 3D TV has the equivalent of two Ks or a 4K.
You can actually pre-order now for $1,450.
Wow!
According to this,
and then I have to buy the $25,000
projector. Now we saw this projector at NAB, and it was two. They were showing off 3D, and it was 2K in each eye.
Right, and that's a lot of 3D is that way because so. In other words, if you want HD 3D, you have to do a 4K screen because you have you're alternating 2Ks. Wow.
I remember walking around Hong Kong in the late 1990s seeing plasma TVs that were tiny for $25,000.
Right.
So, I mean, it drops fast.
I think within 5 years.
Yeah.
And so Apple has to be looking at this and say, look, this is about to happen. How do we play in this space? I would not be surprised to see a 4K Apple, not television, Apple TV.
Apple TV 4K.
Yeah. What about it?
I know you're right.
They don't do bleeding edge. I agree. Let Red do it first.
They're streaming 720p right now.
They're not even doing 1080 yet, are they?
Even though 1080 is accepted, people have TVs that will actually do that. I'm as excited about 4K as anybody else, but every time I hear about, well, how am I going to get the content? Right. And oftentimes the answer is, oh, but we send a guy around.
It has to be. You can't stream it.
We'll like a milk delivery.
It's too big to even stream.
We give you a new box, replace the old box. The new box has new content on it. Yeah. How hard is it for us to stream 1080 as it is off of Vimeo? So I think that Apple, that's probably the third or the fourth thing that's on Apple's list as to what they want to do to revamp television. I don't think they're unsatisfied with resolution. I think they're unsatisfied with the user experience. Remember that in the interview, though, one of the things that he was talking about wasn't just, you know, the definition and the content. It's so hard to find the content that I want. There isn't like a unified search. There isn't an anticipated way. Although I will say that, my Fios box, I can do a search in the program guide, but it's crummy and you forget how to use it. There's so many features that are in the program guide that exist, but they're just so much trouble that you don't even want to bother with it.
Right.
So
Apple TV doesn't do a unified search now, and they could easily do that across the current Apple TV, and they don't.
Google TV does. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Apple TV is 1080, as is Xbox, and Netflix is 1080. So there are, I mean, you can...
I'm at the content that you're getting from iTunes Store.
Right.
You can buy it at 1080p and download it if you so choose.
You have to download it, but you can't stream it. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I remember when we started doing MacBreak, this show came out of a video show that Alex Lindsay bought a $100,000 plus camera from Lucasfilm, and it was the only one. There was only one. This wasn't that long. This was a few years ago. And we shot these things, and you couldn't edit them. You couldn't play it back. Nobody could download them. It was crazy. It was the first 1080p podcast.
And I'm in Canada, Leo. I pay a fortune, and I still have a tiny, tiny cap on my... I pay $170 a month, and I still have something in the 100 of gigabytes of caps. So
these things will have to be solved. Now, they keep saying in the chat room, Apple and iTunes do stream 1080p.
Yeah, I'm looking at the support page right now.
I believe you can checkbox it.
It depends on your system requirements. It must be the way that I have my system set up. When I usually order content, it usually comes to my house as 720p. So
yeah, I'll have to. I have one 720p and one 1080i and one 1080p TV. So, and my Apple TV is hooked up to the lower res one. So I'll have to put it on the big one. See what happens.
It took forever for the 1080p TVs to even get 1080p content.
I know. It's very interesting. It's clear we're in a revolutionary space and it's happening fast. And I think you also make an excellent point, quite well taken, Andy, and Renee, that Apple does not ever want to be on the bleeding edge. But if you look at what $1,500 for this Red Ray, that's unbelievable.
What was funny today is some analysts projecting how many $1,000 TV sets Apple would sell if they were to sell those television sets.
Right. Well, even now, Apple TV is a $500 million business.
Yes.
It's nothing. And, you know, I mean, it's a minor part of Apple's. I mean, it is. You could. I don't care about intense interest. It's still a hobby in terms of revenue. It's cigarette money. We're gonna take a break. We're talking with Renee Ritchie of iMore.com, Andy Iannotko of Chicago Sun Times about the Mac, and I'll tell you what I just ordered in just a moment. I like to do that so people know that then that'll be discontinued any minute now, and the new one will be coming. And I really have a bad feeling about this one. But first, a word from the world's stock media marketplace, Pond5. Look at this, pond5.com. Now, I know there's other stock photography places. This is the one you want. First of all, because they treat content creators right. So it's great for both content users and content creators. And you know what? Those people are pretty much the same. Frequently, if you're buying stuff for your podcast, you're also doing video. and you could sell this video. You set your own price. Pond5 gives you the best royalties in the business. And that's it kind of explains how they can have so much content. Look at this. 1.3 million video clips with 10,000 new ones this week alone. 8.2 million stock photos, 33,000 new this week alone. 752,000 illustrations, 79,000 music tracks, 274,000 sound effects. I love the sound effects, by the way, on Pond5. 2,636 After Effects projects. And there's new stuff all the time. Pond5, it's royalty-free. That means you pay once. You can use it in your productions, your PowerPoints, your keynotes. They've got a really great browser. Makes it very easy to find what you're looking for. I really like Pond5. So if you're a media creator, you should take a look at it for a very great way to make a little money on those videos you're shooting. If you're a media user, it's a creative resource you're going to love. Go to pond5.com. We've got a special deal for you. If you go to, actually, it's pond5.com/MacBreak. You can get 50 free stock media files right now. Pond5.com/MacBreak. And I'll tell you why they do this. Because they want you to experience the browser. They want you to sign up for an account on Pond5. It costs you nothing to do this. You don't even give them a credit card or anything. But once you have the account, I think they realize, once you experience, here's spooky, you want to hear spooky tears? I don't even know what that is. Here's spooky tears.
Pond5.com.
That's the watermark. That goes away, of course, when you download it. Wouldn't that be good in your podcast? Welcome to the Spooky Tears podcast. They have little bumpers. They have music. Are you going to do a podcast about disco? Maybe you have a little traffic in your video that you're producing. You know, you want to. You've got pictures of the cars. I love it. And images. Here's dry thistles. Look at this browser, too. The way they thumbnails. Eggs. An old historical building in Gdansk. Silhouette of pelicans. It's just, it's so fun. You should go to pond5.com/MacBreak and just download these suckers. They're yours free to use. No watermark. Oh, this is a good one. Now, if you're driving, please do not pull over. This is an audio sound effect. This is not real. This is not real.
Pond5.com.
I don't know what it is. That's scary. How about it? I love these. Let's see. Here's a bass chase explosion. Oh.
Pond5.com.
And now, it's the tip of the week on MacBreak. We could use that.
Pond5.com.
We should dress up our sounds. Anyway, I want you to try it. Pond5.com/MacBreak. Set your creativity free. You're going to love it. We thank them for their support. They're nice people, too. I like doing business. All, you know, as we get to know the sponsors, and usually we do sponsors that we know already, it's just nice to work with people you like. With hosts we like, Andy Iannacco, Renee Ritchie. That Alex Lindsay is kind of a son of a bitch, but that's okay. No, just kidding. Where is Alex today? You know, it's so funny. I went back to the Pixel Corps a couple of days ago. I said, where's Alex? I said, we don't know. He's either in London, Stockholm, Zurich. We don't know. He's like Jason Bourne for video. You can't track him.
We've got an extraction team on it right now.
You don't know where he is. Anyway.
Every 4 hours, he's on the phone with somebody saying, listen carefully. I have some very specific set of skills.
It's exactly right.
If you create a green screen, this ends right now. But if you have a poorly executed mat.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to mess with his mats. You know, I was mentioning before the show, this is a week where there's a lot of stories, but they're all little breadcrumbs. And we're going to try to put a loaf of bread together by mushing. You might want to moisten this show and mush it together. Because there's so much. Here, I'll just go through a couple. So they launched iTunes in, 56 new countries, including Russia. Little mistake, a little programming error, I would say. Because when they did the iTunes store, they used a dummy IP address until they launched because they weren't sure where it was going to be. And they thought, this is completely safe. We're just going to use xx.xx.xx.xx. Who'd have known? Who'd have thunk that that actually exists in Russia? So when the iTunes store launched in Russia, data porn He's star born. Escort tonight. He's born. World's He's largest born free escort directory.
Хорошо.
Очень хорошо. Wow. Eros Guide. So I guess they fixed that.
Well, they're going to wait for the first quarter results to come out. Then they'll decide whether they're going to fix it or not.
Yeah, might do well. It was in a section called More Films in Different Languages. I guess it was a localization issue. They've fixed it since.
Brilliant. I've downloaded a few localization issues on a work computer before.
Yeah, I just remember xx.xx.xx. So Kodak, is, as you know, went belly up, or their Chapter 11, I guess. Is that a reorg, or are they doing a Chapter 7? Anyway, the only real asset Kodak had, not Ofoto, not their digital cameras, their patents. And Apple actually has been looking for a partner to buy them because they're worth $500 million. They went to Microsoft, Research in Motion, previous partners. They'd bought the Nortel patents. They couldn't get them to go along. So they've teamed up with, I think, probably the most unlikely company possible. Well, only Samsung would be less likely. Google. Apple and Google are buying the Kodak patents.
The patent troll makes my enemy my enemy's friend.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's it. I mean, in a way, it's encouraging that while now they're kind of in bed together, they're not going to sue each other as much. Maybe, I don't know. It seems
it's always about business,
right?
I don't think they'd ever do something incredibly self-destructive, such as to let all these basic imaging patents just go to whoever, whatever strip mall lawyer wants to buy them. You know, if they can, I think if nothing else, they'll learn from the sad example of Paul McCartney. Where, you know, Paul McCartney and Yoko Ono, like, were kind of fighting over how much they should pay for the Beatles catalog when it became available, which allowed Michael Jackson to scoop in and buy it, and to their incredible regret for the rest of the for the next 20 years. So we can say that Apple and Google are at least more mature and more smart than a Beatle and a survivor spouse of a Beatle.
According to somebody interviewed in Bloomberg Business Week, Apple and Google have, this is Richard Ehrlichman, a former vice president of intellectual property at IBM and president of IP offerings, a patent brokerage. He says Apple and Google learned a lesson from the Nortel auction. They decided to work together to reduce the cost while meeting business needs. So, you know, $500 million is a lot of money. The Apple-led group pursuing Kodak's patents included Microsoft, Nathan Myhrvold's intellectual ventures.
Yeah.
Google's partners included a patent aggregation company, RPX, and Asian manufacturers of Google's Android phones. The two groups separately offered less than $500 million. They've now teamed up to offer more together. Now, this has not been confirmed. Neither Google nor Apple or Kodak are saying. But Kodak needed to do this. They actually got exit financing of $830 million, but it was contingent on them finding a buyer for these patents. So I think that's good news. It means Kodak can turn around or something. They're doing Chapter 11, so that's a reorganization.
Mm. And better Apple and Google have them than someone like a Lotsys or an Intellectual Ventures that would just sue a bunch of app developers,
yeah.
You know, yeah. One by one.
There's another nice little hint from there where if Apple or Google were interested in using these patents as an offensive weapon, then either of these companies would have enough money to just simply buy them outright for themselves. So
right.
This isn't a case of Apple buying this portfolio so they could put the hurt on Google or anybody else.
No, it's defensive or against not Apple against Google and Google against Apple, but defensive against some third party.
Right.
In court documents, Kodak said the patents are worth billions, $2 billion to $2.5 billion. It's already generated more than $3 billion in revenue by licensing the patents to Samsung, LG, Google.
That's it. They're both going to go after Samsung.
Well, it's in, you know, they say the portfolio is worth less because it's been licensed so much, but there's revenue in this portfolio. It's not purely defensive. There is revenue in it.
Right.
See, I told you it was breadcrumbs. The Steve Jobs patent is entirely invalid. That's the touch, the multi-touch patent that was patent 949, so heavily part of the Samsung lawsuit. In late October, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office began a re-examination proceeding. In fact, they concluded that all 20 claims of Apple's rubber banding patent are invalid. This week, they rejected all 20 claims of 949, touchscreen device method and graphical user interface for determining commands by applying heuristics. It's been called the Steve Jobs patent because his name is
it's
on
not
it.
It's not invalid the way that a layperson would understand invalid. Right. It just meant that they've heard arguments that as to why the patent might be invalid, and they're going to grant the investigation, and Apple has to respond now. So it's not like the patent has been exploded in a small safe somewhere in the patent office.
Exactly. Oh shoot! I was hoping it had.
But it is bad-ish news. I mean, this is like when an inspector is coming over to visit your meatpacking plant. He's not gonna give you a certificate that lets you do twice as much meat as possible. It's the worst that can happen is that you get shut down. The best that can happen is that Apple gets to keep going the way they were before.
So they have a right to appeal even all the way up to the Supreme Court on this. And I'm sure there will be appeal.
What's crazy, though, is they were trademark lawyers and patent lawyers arguing about this on Twitter and arguing about what the definitions mean and what this action by the trademark office means. And it seems like it is not it's not as simple as the web has been making it, and nothing usually is. But patents in general, I think they get reported in a very dynamic, exciting way.
Yeah, we don't understand it. Florian Mueller and his Foss patents, which is kind of my source for all of this, says many patent claims that are rejected at this stage do ultimately survive.
Yeah.
He says it's also a mistake to underestimate the significance of this first office action. Also, a complete rejection of all claims of a given patent is potentially more devastating, that's what happened, than one affecting only some claims. But Apple will obviously appeal this.
And again, it's the same. It's the patent office just letting the companies hash it out over and over again instead of doing anything themselves. Yep.
HTC, as we mentioned earlier, reached settlement with Apple. All Things D has at least part of the settlement. I think the thing we'd like to know is how much HTC is paying. Look at the... A little bit was redacted, though, just in case you were wondering.
Looks like our CIA records.
For those not watching on video... it says confidential, highly confidential attorney eyes only, Apple document for the settlement with HTC, and it's entirely blacked out. I could see bullets. It's entirely redacted.
The bullet points are non-redacted.
No. We now know that there are 73 bullet points. That's all. And a footnote.
So really the only thing left to speculate after looking at this document as to what part of that document required them to increase the left margin all the way to the end of the paper. Everything, there's just two lines that are just all the way to the left.
It's 143 pages, and there's quite a bit of ink in this document. But there's some non-ink. I mean, there's some actual legible stuff. I'm scrolling through the PDF now.
What a wonderful open and free democracy we all live in.
You see things like section 1.17, HTC Android Mobile Communications Devices means black, 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 black. I think we know what that means, but okay. my God.
Maybe it's just that the lawyers are really, really, really have filthy mouths.
So it's like Ricka fricka rucka
the blanket blanking phone rick-a, with the stupid blanking. Sam Jackson for the defense.
Do you think that they use a magic marker to do this, or they have some tool? They have some software tool.
There's an app for that.
I think PDF Pen. I think it's old school. because there was actually kind of a famous leak a year ago or
hold it up to the light.
They decided to use just like digital technology, just simply obscure it, not knowing that if you dig into the PDF, you can actually take away that layer again and send back again.
Oh yeah.
As a matter of fact, I know of one large-ish company that actually still maintains typewriters in their offices because they like having a form of communication where there is no digital trail of any kind whatsoever.
Right.
The Battlestar Galactica typewriter.
Yes.
So Florian Mueller, again, read all the non-redacted parts. And among other things, he noted that HTC has agreed not to clone Apple products. Seems like a good thing. And the pinch-to-zoom gesture has been licensed. I don't know if that was one of the invalidated patents.
That was highlighted as a patent that's easy to get around. I mean, it's Apple doesn't own the entire concept of pinch-to-zoom.
No, it's 915. It's the 915 patent.
Exactly. And also, I think I've read the same thing that you have about it, where the frustrating thing is that the concept of cloning the iPhone is just so vague as far as what we can see in the document that it's like, you don't have a mechanical keyboard, you're cloning the iPhone. Yes, please.
Right.
But HTC has always been, at least from, I've always loved HTC. From the HTC One, Nexus One on, they've always had a much more different design aesthetic than Apple has.
Yeah.
Even now, the Droid DNA looks nothing like an iPhone. They're very distinct.
Yeah. But I keep coming back to that one of those documents that surfaced during the Samsung Apple trial, where Apple introduced as evidence a proposal that they sent to Samsung before they went the nuclear option with the lawsuit, as a way of proving to the court, look, we tried to get them to license this technology. We didn't try to waste the court's time immediately. And this document is a plan for here's how Samsung would pay us licensing fees for its for your handsets, and it included several specific examples, including the BlackJack 2 phone, which is really, if anything, it's a clone from the BlackBerry, as the name might imply. It looks nothing like the iPhone, operates nothing like the iPhone, and yet Apple was saying, you owe us $30 per handset on each one of these devices, which we will discount to $8 for the following bunch of reasons. And earlier in the document, it explains that there is sort of a Microsoft coupon. They define. I think about a way to put it. It's almost as if they describe the qualities of the iPhone like umami. Where how do you define it? It's what I mean when I say umami.
You'll know when you taste it.
You'll know when we sue you for it.
Well, that's kind of actually exactly right. By the way, they also have an anti-cloning deal with Microsoft, so it's the same language as in the Microsoft agreement. The thing, there might be a time bomb in here. For instance, if industry standards or the official Android specifications require HTC to implement functionality, Apple can't exercise its anti-cloning rights. If it's in the Android specs, Apple would have to sue Google directly. So there might be a little time bomb in here. HTC could just go, hey, it's official Android. We got to do it. And then Apple would have to go after Google.
Andy Rubin said so.
Yeah.
But the other fault is that my understanding of the Microsoft agreement is that it's a reciprocal agreement where Apple also can't clone Microsoft devices.
Right.
According to the people who've examined this document more closely than I have, there is no such reciprocity with the HTC agreement where Apple can say,
steal from HTC.
We have a multicolor.
Johnny Ive would never do that.
All right, let's take a break. We do have Mac news. They're speculating. They're saying there mustn't be any Mac news. Yes, there is iPhone 5S news. Mm-hmm. There is Made in USA news. And there is Mac news. And I will tell you what I ordered. I ordered two things. One, I think I'm safe on. I did order the new iMac, the 27-inch. Some people are starting to get it, apparently. They've gotten the shipping notice. If you ordered it the day it was available, they say, December 15th delivery. So some people will be getting that. Do you have one, Andy? You have the 21, right?
I've got the 21 on loan from Apple. I've got that upstairs. So I've been playing for that for about a week.
I want the 27, and I loaded it up, you know, on top of the line, everything.
Yeah, I mean, the 20, we can
including
talk about
the Fusion drive, because I wanted to see how the 3-terabyte Fusion drive performed.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like the 21. I'm just concerned that Apple builds things so well. I mean, I've got a 2008 iMac in my office that's still ticking along and still working great. And one of the reasons why I'm still using it is that 2 or 3 years later, I was able to max out the RAM. I was able to add things to it that I didn't think I needed, or at least when my budget was, hey, I happen to have X dollars in the bank, let's spend on a new iMac. The fact that 21 inches is just so absolutely sealed up that you can do just
nothing.
As soon as you take it out of the box, it's locked into what it is at that moment. So that's why I think that if I were buying a new iMac this year, even if I didn't really want a 27-inch screen, I would probably be buying the 27-inch just so that I would have these options as we go in the
future. And that's exactly. There are a couple of things I had to have. One was a Visa mount because it's for my office, so it has to go on the Ergotron arm so I can slide it in and out during shooting. I'm sorry, I had to. And then I put 16 gigs of RAM. I thought, there's no way.
I'll
never need more than that.
Does the 27 still have Visa mount options?
I was told it does. I'll be disappointed if it doesn't. I know the 21 does check. Not.
I believe the 21 does not. I know that the 27-inch last year's model had it.
Yes, because we have it on an arm now.
The 21-inch is more like a MacBook Air of a desktop now than a...
It is. It's no user serviceable.
Yeah.
I'm just going to look back. You know, the problem is date. I need to find the new generation. Well, you do that research for me, Andy, would you?
I'm looking.
the other thing that I bought that I am worried about.
This is in the small print of the mounts Apple Store listing, not compatible with the iMac late 2012.
Visa is not.
I'm gonna check again.
But that could be the 21 inch.
No, it says it's for the 20. I'm continuing to look. I remember that from notes from a conversation I had, but I'm going to find. I'll see if I can find it on an actual Apple support page.
The other thing I did buy that I'm worried about, I decided I finally pulled the trigger on the Thunderbolt, the 27-inch Thunderbolt display. We got a couple because we got one for Lisa for her new MacBook Retina, and one for me for my house.
I got one too,
and I'm just know that they're going to do a thin one of those. But no, they've announced everything. There's no more announcements till the end of next year, right? No,
and it'll take them a while to get enough panels to spare them from the iMac production to make the LEDs. Okay. I mean, last time it took 6 to 9 months, I think, after the last new iMac came out before the Thunderbolt displays came out.
I'm just going to be depressed if they release a skinny one.
Or a Retina one.
No, they won't. I'm not worried about that. Anyway, that's the one I'm worried about. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more. Andy's going to do some research. We'll talk about new iPhone and new Mac news. But first, a word from Squarespace, the great Squarespace. I have to emphasize what you get with Squarespace. Web hosting that is, bar none, the best web hosting out there, and the best software. And, you know, by the way, I don't want to imply that you could run, say, WordPress on your Squarespace site. You can't. They're tightly coupled, and that's for good reason. It's one of the reasons the hosting is so good, because they're so tightly coupled that you get hosting that's dedicated, designed to work with the content management system. And I think there's a real advantage to having them host the content management system. They keep it up to date. They you don't have to worry about upgrades. I'm constantly upgrading my blog. You know, every day there's a new, in fact, today there's a new WordPress. So what does that mean? I have to go, I have to FTP it over, I have to install it, things might break, plugins will certainly break. You don't have to ever worry about that with Squarespace. It's all there. The best content, and it really is the best content management system. For instance, they've got all, so because, again, they control the ecosystem. So they have a beautiful designer templates, but every single one of them now is mobile responsive design. So when you upload an image to your Squarespace site, it automatically gives you 7 sizes so that it'll fit on any screen from an iPhone 3 all the way up to that 27-inch iMac. And the site will automatically rearrange itself, and you don't ever have to worry about that. Design the best looking site you can. If you're a photographer looking for a portfolio site, if you're an artist, a designer, I really think Squarespace is what you should look at. The templates are gorgeous. You have complete control of the design. If you're an HTML5, CSS, JavaScript coder, they have a developer platform for you, but you don't need to be to get just great looking stuff that really reflects your style. Pick any template and then look at all the designs, all the sites based in that template. You'll be amazed at the variety. The template's just the starting point. And if you're a creative, I know you want it to be unique. You want it to express yourself. And that's what Squarespace does. Then you get the great hosting. You get the integration with all the social networks. You can put Google Maps on there, Flickr, Facebook, Twitter, complete integration. Import and look at, scroll down a little bit, Chad, because you see that's the peak template. But these are all based on that template. They all look different. They're all unique, and that's the point. No two Squarespace sites look alike unless you want them to. Really a great system. You can import and export, so you're never trapped. It supports all the API, you know, Blogger, Typepad, WordPress, so you can import and export. And look at the pricing. So here's the deal. Go to squarespace.com, click the yellow Get Started button, and you don't need a credit card. You don't need any personal information, just your email address, the name of your site, and a password. And you've got the run of the place for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, you could take that site and make it a full paid site for a very affordable price. They've got the standard plan, which is $8 a month when you buy an annual package. The unlimited plan is $16 a month when you buy an annual package. You will want that annual package because they give you a free domain registration. They hook it all up when you buy an annual plan. And you're going to get the most savings with our offer code because we're going to give you 10% off your first purchase with any new account. All you have to do is use the offer code MacBreak12. Look what you get with the unlimited plan. $16 a month. Unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs. That means multiple sites on the same Squarespace site. So if you're a photographer, every client can have their own unique password-protected portfolio. Unlimited bandwidth. So if something blows up and suddenly you're like the hottest thing since Justin Bieber, no problem. They'll give you all the bandwidth you need. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. You get all these great features, $16 a month. And, of course, the best support documentation. They've got webinars. They've got a great forum, a great help section. It's just a wonderful place. Try it today, squarespace.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK12. You'll save 10% on your first purchase on a new account. Let me thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. My voice is going. I should start talking like this.
Then the Bane voice.
So I just instinctively trust you more when you talk like
Bane. Bane, I was watching the Batman Rises trailer.
Yeah.
Because it's on cable now, right? And he goes up at the end. It's a very interesting voice. Maybe I will say.
I am here to take over the world.
Anyway,
Leo, I did check online. My notes from a conversation with somebody in a position to know reflect that the 27-inch 2012 iMac is not Visa compliant.
Oh crap!
I'm also looking at the product listing on the Apple store page for a Visa mount adapter kit, and it says in tiny print, "Note: not compatible with the iMac late 2012."
Right.
Compatible with anything up to the 2011 27-inch.
Wow, iMac. That's a bummer. Maybe I'll cancel it.
Or a mod project, Leo. You can broadcast.
two words, Leo.
Duct tape.
The Ant Man secret weapon. Duct tape.
Aftermarket.
We'll just suspend it from the ceiling.
And they do make they do make Justin Bieber duct tape. So you can have, you know.
By the way, Beatmaster has exactly my one complaint. I like Batman Rises a lot, but Beatmaster said all he had to do was punch him in the mask. That was his breathing mask. One swift punch to the plastic breathing mask, and Bane's gone.
It wasn't in the script.
Oh. I mean, come on. That's a kind of a glaring, gaping hole. You know, they're fighting. I mean, they fight like crazy. There's a lot of fist fighting. Just one boom, right to the... That's what I would have done. Boom. It's like hitting a dog in the nose. They go, ow. And then Bane's over. Just a thought. Next time, Batman. Next time. It's not a car. I can do that, too. It's always great. Christian, everybody who does Batman just talks like this. That way, you can't tell it's Bruce Wayne.
Oh, my God. I've never thought of it before. Batman is Harvey Fierstein.
Harvey Fierstein is not a car.
Dresses in an outrageous costume.
Batman is.
You like the Batmobile? Had new seat covers put in.
It would be
pricey,
much more
but you live only once am I right.
It'd make a great penguin, though.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, somebody, it happens every time. Somebody punched an article. Some blogger said, oh, no, the 5S will be available in June. Actually, I think it was an analyst.
Yep.
And the whole article says that Apple is going to move to a twice a year shipping plan on all of its products. This is Peter Misek predicting the iPhone 5S has a new super HD. I think he's just making this stuff up.
Yep.
He's pulling it right out of his butt, right? Super HD.
Apple could.
Go ahead.
I mean, the iPad 4 showed us that Apple is not afraid anymore, or they're willing to surprise us with their product schedules. And it's absolutely possible that there might be iOS devices coming out in spring. But this article doesn't seem to have any relationship with it would be incidental or coincidental if that happened based on this article.
He's a Piper Jeffries analyst, and he says, super HD camera screen, a better battery, NFC, and get ready, five colors. I'm sorry, 6 to 8 colors.
That's all just, the colors.
All the colors.
9. It would be greater than 1, less than 18, probably not higher than 12, but I'm guessing maybe 6, and one of them will be black. Probably the other one white, but maybe, yeah, it's like, I mean, Renee, I mean, you get these things all the time, too. It's like usually when someone has a rumor and they legitimately cannot tell you where that source is from, but it's a very good source, they have a way to at least faint towards, I'm not just making this up. This is just, you know, I was in Washington State celebrating a certain new election result. And during a Cheetos run, we talked about...
What about this?
Ian McKellen was with me in his full Gandalf the White costume, and that's what he pulled out.
This will not stand. John Sculley, no less, says, I think Apple is going through a very significant change now in terms of product cycles. Traditionally, Apple introduces products once a year. Now it's really introducing products twice a year. The complexity of that from a supply chain is immense, and Apple seems to be doing it well. So I think
one product. They introduced one product twice a year. Once.
So I think that people are underestimating just how well Apple is run. No, they're not. And just, I don't think anybody's underestimating how well Apple is run and just how successful the company can be when it gets that twice a year product introduction cycle. Okay, Renee, you have to vet rumors all the time at iMore. You're the new rumor king. Ever since, Think Secret went away, it's iMore.com. What do you think?
I think that, again, I agree 100% with Andy that this does not pass any kind of smell test you want to give it. I do think that there is a possibility that Apple will do more iOS devices in the spring because, you know, they've now demonstrated the capacity to iterate when they want to and not necessarily have to wait for yearly events. But again, it would be coincidental to these stories. A super HD display is what exactly? How does that, you have to break this down logically. How does that fit with Apple's existing Retina display technology? What panels are on the market? How would they fit it in? What would happen with apps? And this just sounds more like one of those every year at Christmas there's going to be a red iPhone right. Sort of rumors.
All right, but wait, there's more. Horace Dediu, who is from ASIMCO, is traditionally pretty right on. He says it's something I've also speculated is happening. Sculley's comments prompted me to weigh in with the possible evidence. First, all the major products which Apple sells were updated this fall. This is unprecedented. Not only were product launches scheduled in the spring, historically they'd been spread throughout the year. The odds that they happen to coincide by accident are nil. In other words, he says the fact that they were able in September and October to update the entire line indicates that's the plan. It wasn't a coincidence. He says not only that, but the move of iPad, iPhone, iPod, MacBook, and iMac to all launch once a year in fall seems risky because of the gap that competitors have to fill for 6 months until that happens.
Again, that's not what happened. They introduced the MacBook Airs and the MacBook Pros in June. They did the iPhone in September. They did the iPads and the other Macs in October. And again, it's absolutely possible. Apple will likely, I don't want to say likely, Apple is absolutely possible that they will introduce more iOS devices or iterations. For the last 2 years, I believe the last 2 years, they had the iPads, as far as I know, ready to go before the holidays, and they chose to wait until spring. And this year, they chose not to. So it's more a strategic thing than anything else for Apple.
He also says that Apple, that when you do it once a year, that your production is bursty with breakneck, round-the-clock crushes followed by periods of idle time. That's inefficient, lowers morale. And Han Hai, which is more than half Apple production, has shifted its locations closer to sources of labor. He says, until this shift, Han Hai depended on migrant labor difficult to manage. Moving production so that labor is local means a steadier workforce. And it means you also have steadier work to do. So it could be them responding to Apple's signal, hey, we're going to be doing this all year round.
they'll crush it twice a year. Apple people won't be able to sleep for the entire month of April and the month of October.
I wonder, though, if some people wouldn't be happier if Apple were a little bit better equipped to meet demand when it's there. Has there been a significant Apple release in the mobile space, at least, of iPhone and the iPad, where it, at least for the first couple of months, they were able to ship anywhere within the first couple of days? It's like right now, typically you're used to seeing like a week or two delay if you want to order through the Apple store, or if you have to sort of haunt the physical locations to wait for a shipment to come in. So I think that most people are happier to see Apple come up with a couple of different releases on a sort of a higher schedule, mm-hmm. because everybody's contracts are expiring at staggered schedules right now. But there's something to be said for the reason why Apple's currently getting clobbered by Android sales is partly because there are a jillion factories turning out Android handsets, but only a couple that are doing iPhone handsets.
He points out, Horace Dedieu does, that this is such a huge change in the way a company is run. It should not be underestimated. He said when Ford did this, they shut production down for 6 months.
He's got a really good point about right now Apple has a problem is that they can't satisfy demand when the product ships. And then by right. the time they get into balance,
exactly.
it's so far after the product is shipped that people are starting to wait for the next one. And right. that means that they're not selling the most they could at the beginning or at the end. And that's something they
some management consultant came in there and said, look, you guys, if you went to twice a year, it'd smooth that out. And what Dedieu says is, look, this would be such a big shift. All employees would be affected. He says, if it is happening, it's possible there's some knowledge of this change dissipating outside the company, which would perhaps explain Scully's confidence in his claim. Do you think it's possible? I poo-pooed this on the radio show, and I hope I wasn't wrong. Somebody said, you know, I think maybe I should wait for the 5S in May. And I said, no way. It'll be September. Is it possible there'll be a 5S in May?
Sure. It's possible.
Exactly.
Is it likely?
For 1 year, we had this nice thing where there were iPads in spring, iPhones in summer, and iPod touches in the fall. And it was nice for Apple because they could spread out their sprints for release. And it was nice for us because there was something new every quarter, except for the holiday quarter where they just sold everything that was new. And now putting everything in September, it was exhausting. And it also begs the question, what are they going to do for the first 9 months of 2013. And right. I think almost certainly there will be, whether it's a new iPad mini or a new iPhone or yes, there will be something in the spring. But is it going to be a wait for upgrade or it'll be, it's basically the same with a few differences. You might as well get what you can now if you need it.
I think unless phone companies change their cycle from the 2 year cycle, this is a bad move because people get upset. If they buy an iPhone and 6 months later it's obsolete and they're stuck for 2 years, that's upsetting.
iPhone HD Max.
But it's what's going on in the Android world, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, you mentioned the Droid, but the Droid Razors, you know, they've updated those monthly, it seems like.
Oh, but it's a different ecosystem over there, isn't it? Because if you look at the whole palette of Android superphones, essentially there's a new phone coming out every 5 or 6 weeks. And so maybe you're upset that you bought the HTC One because the Samsung Galaxy S3 came out 2 months later, and now you're upset you bought the S3 because the Note 2 came out right. just a couple months after that. So Apple users are a different breed of cat entirely. So there might be something to that, but I'm sure. But I think that we kind of overstate how upset people are. They're going to be locked into 2 year contracts no matter what they do. I think they assume that at some point they're going to be upset that they don't get the iPhone with hoverboard technology built in.
Damn it.
the way that Apple works sometimes, maybe they'll be saying, "Oh, thank God I didn't wait because the new they just obsoleted my old model, and that was the last model that you could actually hook up to a camera."
Well, something I was wondering about is, you know, because the competing phones all have such huge screens now, and if you walk into Best Buy and every television set from 32 inches to 102 inches were the same price. Which one would you buy? And because of subsidies, that's essentially what's happening with phones. So people for whom size is the only criteria just say, oh, I can get a Note 2 or a Galaxy S. I can get a Nokia 920 for half the price of an iPhone.
Right.
So I wonder if Apple, if they do shift to an annual schedule, will start to diversify the product line. I mean, they went down an iPad. Maybe they'll go multiple with the iPhone finally.
Wow, this would be a big shift. This would be such a change if Apple does. kind of start shipping new stuff every 6 months.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I was kind of pissed off that they did an iPad 4 only 8 months after the iPad 3 came out. But that's only because they had a kind of, it was an unspoken rule that they broke, but it was unspoken. And if the new rule is every 6 months, I think people would say, well, it's every 6 months. We know that.
Yeah. The upgrade was so small. I mean, it was LTE internationally, and it was,
LTE internationally and plus the new incompatible connector. I think, and the speed boost, but offset that against getting to use a Retina iPad for 6 months that you would not have had you waited until September or October. I mean,
I'm glad I bought the 3. I'm not saying that. But.
And for me, it's not much faster. It's that what the iPad 3 could do in the red zone, this one can do kind of comfortably in third.
Right. Right.
I wish I drove a manual, because sometimes there are these car commentaries like, oh, is that a good thing?
You don't ever redline.
I know they go incrementally up from one. That in my car there's a D and then there's a D with a circle around it.
You never redline the Fiesta, is that it?
Overdrive, Andy, overdrive.
I redline my Mustang a lot. I've learned, though. I know exactly when it's going to redline, and so because you can get to, so I'm merging on the freeway in second gear, and you can get to 65 in second gear, but you'll redline right about 60, 65. So I just smoothly shift.
That's what the A5, that's what the A6X feels like compared to the A5. It's just.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about something else. IMAX. Yes. Or Max. Max, I should say. Max. Mac news. Mackety Mac Mac. First, let's talk about backing up your Mackety Mac Mac or your PC with the best backup plan out there, Carbonite. It's automatic, secure, affordable online backup for your home office, even your small business. Always one flat monthly rate. Actually, it's a yearly plan with unlimited backup in that plan. It's secure. Not only encrypted on the way, 128-bit SSL, but you can do trust no one encryption if you choose. And only you have the key. It's as little as $59 a year for a computer. That's less than $5 a month. And it's cloud storage, too. That means when you use Carbonite, you can look at your files, your backed up files, anywhere, anytime. Just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer or use their free iPhone, iPad apps. They also have Android, and they can just log right in. So it's cloud storage of all that data. I'm just a big fan of Carbonite. In fact, I wouldn't take a laptop out of the house without making sure Carbonite's on it. Automatic, continual, off-site backup for as little as $59 a year. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. You do not need a credit card. You just need our offer code, MacBreak. And if you decide after 2 weeks, and I do want you to try it because it's, you know, you got to make sure, you got to understand that you have enough bandwidth and so forth. It uses your upstream bandwidth, but it's gentle. It pays attention. It only does it when you're idle and so forth. But that means if you have 128 kilobits up, it may not be enough depending on how much data you want to back up. So try it for 2 weeks. Get a sense of it. If you decide you want to buy, use the offer code MacBreak. You'll get 14 months for the price of 12. Two free months. Carbonite.com. It's just kind of peace of mind. You set it and forget it. And you just know if disaster happens, I got it. It's under control. Carbonite.com. Give it a try today. Mac or PC if you've got friends that own the other computer. So, made in the U.S. of A. That was the other, I don't want to say bomb, water balloon that Tim Cook dropped, is that Apple's going to invest $100 million to start making some Macs in the USA. What's interesting is we're already seeing some Macs, some of the iMacs, the 21-inch iMacs say made in the USA. Thoughts about that?
Nothing for Canada, Leo? There was no Canadian announcements?
No, because is there a drum? That's interesting. You know, we make a big deal in the U.S. Oh, we want made in the USA. Is that also true in Canada? Like you'll look for goods that are made in Canada?
We will not buy Vermont maple syrup, Leo. We will not do
it. I don't blame you. You just can't. You just can't. Nor should you.
No.
Well, I mean, there is a problem with like using assembly plants in Canada because with so many like lumbering and chainsaw accidents, very few of them have all 10 fingers. So for iPhones,
but three claws, Andy. Three claws.
Yeah, I mean, it really, there's every company says in front of the microphones and in front of the crowd of cheering people that, oh, we believe in the Made in the USA logo because we want to bring jobs to this country. But you know that in the back room, it's like, you know what? We ran the numbers again. It actually cost us less. It actually cost us less money for this product if we were to assemble it locally.
Well, and Dvorak raised an interesting point because they said Made in USA. They didn't say made by U.S. workers. So, for instance, it's clear, even though Tim Cook kind of denied it, it's clear that the reason Apple and everybody else manufactures in China is because the labor is cheaper there, right?
And everything's very close together. So it's the economies of scale make it easy to go from plant to plant, just assemble the entire thing there. And you'd have to bring all those plants and everything and build the same kind of community you have in Shenzhen, for example, somewhere in Texas or somewhere in California.
That's one of the rumors, is that Foxconn would actually build this Apple plant. But what Dvorak said is, no, it's not going to get you more jobs because they're going to do it with robots, which is, in fact, the only thing cheaper than a Chinese worker is a robot. Can they make iPhones with robots?
Well, they already do a lot of that stuff. I mean, one of the most interesting things about the manufacturing process for the iPhone 5 is that the way that they fit the glass screens to like those metal tubs that are the cases of them, where they have a high speed. According to this is directly from the
movie, the Bob Mansfield movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where a high speed camera like just takes a look at photographs, hundreds and hundreds of these things at the same time, because tolerances are very, very tight, but there's a little bit variation, of course, there's gonna be. So they figure out that, oh well, actually this specific case is 0.0007% out on this axis, but this specific piece of glass is also 0.007% out of alignment in the same way. Make sure these two get together. So, I mean, it's mostly rough. My understanding, it's mostly rough assembly at this point that's being done by human hands.
Right.
And the more they automate that, the more that they can, again, bring factories here without bringing human assemblers. But still, that's jobs, even if it's just people who have to keep the lights on and the machines running.
Yeah,
and
there's some jobs.
Blood after the robots run amok.
Right. which inevitably will happen, as we all know from many movies. Interesting point. $100 million, which is what they said they devote to this, isn't as much as it might sound. In fact, according to Philip Elmer DeWitt, writing in Fortune, he asked Dan Luria, a labor economist at the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center. Actually, Bloomberg asked. And he said, that's a $100 million factory. That's about 200 jobs and produces about 1 million units a year. Not nearly enough for the MacBooks or even the iMacs. Only the Mac Pro and the Mac Mini sell fewer than 1 million a year. And, of course, the Mac Pro is big, heavy, expensive to ship. It seems Philip says, you know, that's what they're going to make. They're going to make the Mac Pro. We've already said you're making a new Mac Pro by the end of 2013. Extra labor costs associated with manufacturing in the U.S., of course, could easily be absorbed by a higher ticket item much more easily. And Mac Pros are often built to order, aren't they? So I think that it's pretty clear that if they're going to make something in the USA, it'll be a Mac Pro.
And that's why the delay, they have to wait for the factory to be built before they can do the next generation
Yes.
Mac Pro.
Exactly. Okay. And we're all in agreement. That's really not interesting. There's no debate. There's no flying donuts, nothing.
The thing that was interesting, that was right before that, when Tim Cook said that 80% of Apple's profits are coming from products they released in the last 4 months.
Wow.
And you figure out, you know, the Mac Pro isn't one of those things.
Yeah, 80%. Yeah. The Mac Pro soon is going to be the 1%. The computer for the 1%.
Yeah, you and Alex. I mean,
that was one of those quotes that made me kind of arch my eyebrow, saying, but we're not talking about, like, they weren't making phones 6 months ago. They weren't making, it's like you did an incremental update to your entire product line. That is impressive, but you know, okay, fine.
And if you're in Australia, don't use Apple Maps. Actually, it's safe now. They fixed it. But the actual police in Mildura, Australia, were warning people, please, do not use Apple Maps. A number of people trying to find the town of Mildura became hopelessly lost in the bush, and it's dead summer in Australia. Temperatures up to 46 degrees Celsius. One man was stranded for 24 hours last week. Three more have had to be rescued after following directions on Apple's new maps, which located Mildura among the dusty, sun-baked trails of Murray Sunset National Park and 30 miles away from the actual location of the town.
It's I know it's not funny because that's real danger, but I just imagine, you know, that Monday morning meeting with the map group saying, "Hi, well, I've called you today because one of our software products finally killed a guy." Thoughts?
You really wouldn't expect that, but there you go. I mean, that's how important maps are.
They started looking into it and they saw that there's two Mulduras. One was called Mildura Regional County something or other. And Google, because they employ so many people and they do a lot of real-world checking, said, no, this isn't the right one.
Right.
This is the right one. But Apple just listed both of them. And because one sounded more official, I guess that was the one that was given dominance. And it's often in map applications, if they can't find the specific place, they just drop a pin in the middle of the area.
well, in this case, so it's bad idea.
It's a tragedy of errors.
Yeah.
And it's been fixed.
Yes. Apple, of course, immediately fixed it. We've
that
had
one
at least,
place has been fixed.
Yeah, one place. Well, that's the problem, is what else lurks in there. We've had at least four documented cases, said Senior Sergeant Stephen Phelan. The map puts it at least 70 kilometers from where it should be. We've got people bogged down in Sunset Country.
A friend of mine's house is in the middle of a park, and we've both reported it every week since the maps came out, and it's still sitting in the middle of that park.
Oh, that's the problem. Unless somebody dies, it's hard to fix, you know.
So that's your mandate, MacBreak Weekly listeners. Are you willing to take one for the team?
And of course, there's been a lot of attention paid to this, and nobody died. We should point out there was one guy stranded in 46 degrees Celsius.
Good news is that nobody died.
Nobody. Apple Maps.
Not a good way to start the meeting.
Yeah. Hey, good news. Nobody's died yet. But let's fix that, shall we?
Eddie, sit down. Now, the good news is... No,
I've got good news and I've got bad news.
For a Monday morning meeting of the Maps team, we've got two important pieces of news. I'm going to have a special guest, Mr. Tim Cook, and B, bring a box and everything in your desk with you to this meeting.
Yeah.
He used to be this legendary fixer. Now look at you.
So the problem is there's no water. You can get bogged down in the sand. It's really hot. And there's no phone reception by the time you get there. Yeah. So you're kind of stuck. He got there. This guy got there at 6 p.m., realized he was nowhere near Mildura, but he couldn't continue to drive because of the sand on and around the road. So he stayed there. He was stuck there 24 hours. He was finally rescued. Jeez Louise.
Yeah. That's super intense.
That's not good.
It reminded me of the time a friend of mine was, I was visiting a friend of mine in Iowa, and they were telling me, but it was October, and they were telling me about, I was commenting about how, wow, just all these like long, like lonely highways with like nothing there. And of course they start telling me about how everybody knows, like has an uncle or somebody whose car broke down in like January. They didn't find him until March. And the story always ends with, and the funny thing was when they found him, he was right on the top of a hill. He was no more than about 100 yards away from a mall, but with the whiteout conditions, he just never saw him, poor thing. Anyway, so that's why I keep a complete camping kit inside the trunk, logs and
I should and say, we do know somebody who did die because of incorrect GPS directions. James Kim, who was an analyst and a lab guy at Tech TV, took his family, followed GPS directions. This was a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, and went up into the snow. And they thought it looked like a road on the GPS. It was not. They got on a fire road. They got stuck. He went to get help and died in the snow. His family survived, thank goodness, partly thanks to burning tires. They were there for days. So it isn't something that is actually very serious.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of talk that Apple should license, you know, Nokia Maps or license Google Maps when they're already licensing TomTom Maps. But there was this old art proverb where you can't keep looking at other art. You have to look at the real world. And again, Google employs thousands of people to go out and look at the real world and correct these things and make human decisions about which is the correct location. And until Apple can scale up like that, they're going to be behind. They're going to have these problems.
Yeah, and I think that's the point Google was trying to make, and Nokia's been making as well, is that this is not something trivial. Apple just used information from the Australian Gazetteer. I mean, this threw a dart at the map. This was all, you know, in a Gazetteer, and they just took it as authoritative and had a human looked at it, maybe they would have known the difference. I don't know. I mean, there's millions of points in here.
Well, I mean, it's why it's hard to get started in a business where so many people have already made these mistakes and learn from them. I mean, Nokia, they don't, when they put a hospital on the map, they don't just trust that from the source. They send someone out to verify that it's there. Not only do they do that, but while they're there, they map out, here is where the emergency exit is. So that if someone pushes that button on the console of their in-car navigation and says, take me to the closest emergency room,
right,
it doesn't take you within a block of it. It says, turn left here. There's a one-way street. Here's how you get to the emergency room entrance.
Yeah.
So this, I can't even guess as to, that's just one example of things that you can't just license databases. You really need boots on the ground to fine-tune these things.
You know, moving on, but obviously that's serious. And I'm, you know, I have to think that as soon as that story came out, TomTom and NavTech and Google and everybody went, quick, check our map of Australia.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of an obscure, it's not like a hospital. That's an obscure thing. So remember that Apple stock drop we were talking about? I guess it kind of inspired a trader for Rochdale Securities to create a get-rich scheme. He purchased 1.625 million Apple shares October 25th, the same day that Apple was to release its, you may remember this, its last quarterly earnings. He thought, well, they'll release the quarterly earnings. We know they're going to be good. The price will go up and I'll dump it. My employer will never know. Whoops. Stocks fell. He said, oh, no, I added three zeros. I was supposed to just purchase 1,625. they suffered financial losses of $5 million. Would have been more. It was actually about $1 billion worth of loss, but they were able to quickly trade it out. And of course now he's under arrest.
He is definitely not going to win the Christmas ham this year at the big office party. That's for sure.
It's all allegations. I should, you know, he's not been found guilty of wire fraud, but, ongoing investigation. the FBI says, we think this is what happened. Fascinating. It is the biggest Apple loss in 4 years. It's not an insignificant loss. How about this? All of the revenue that they talk about all the time, people making money on the App Store, half of it goes to just 25 companies.
Most of that is Rovio.
Most of it's Angry Birds. Almost all Angry Birds. That's a big thing.
Yeah, and that's why it kind of lends light to when Apple and other individuals talk about the advantage of the App Store, like here's how many apps we have, here's the vibrancy of the market. It really isn't so much the numbers and isn't even so much the amount of money that's being transacted on there. It really is, do you have the core 100 or 200 best-selling apps, the most popular apps that people need on every single platform?
Right.
If you do not, then you can't compete. But if you have a smaller App Store that just has those 300 apps that so many people use, that's really all you need. It makes a difference to developers, but not to, as this number really indicates, it's great if you're one of those handful of developers that is making hundreds of thousands of dollars off of your app. If you're not, then you're pretty much trying to develop your own little market. You're trying to sell your own 10, 20, 30,000 copies of this app to get going. And so long as you've got more than 30,000 Microsoft Windows 8 handsets out there, you're in there with a chance at least.
Speaking of Microsoft, we're starting to see some hints. I think Microsoft actually added a SKU. What was it, Renee? For iPad Office.
There was rumors a while ago. One of the in Eastern Europe, some Microsoft executive
there was a PowerPoint
press release,
yeah,
and said that they were coming out with the iOS version.
But I just saw something this week. Let me see if I can find the story because I don't think it's in our rundown. But there was something released where they had PowerPoint for iOS as well as Android, by the way, and Word. And anyway, I think it's pretty clear. Even Microsoft is kind of implying that they're going to have an office in the next 6 months, next year.
Yeah, there's an article on All Things D that I just came out. It was just posted like 15 minutes ago that kind of ties into another story that we were talking about earlier today about Apple and Microsoft are butting heads a little bit about signups for the SkyDrive service.
Yeah.
Their SkyDrive app updates aren't being allowed because not for the usual reasons that we assume, which is, oh, well, you can't sell upgrades to your service through our app without giving us a 30% cut, or you have to give us the same people the same deal that you're giving up elsewhere. They're also banning outside services from fully implementing all these features, because at some point, if something's using SkyDrive and allowing people to use this extended service that they bought elsewhere, that same deal should be available through an in-app purchase. And so therefore, Apple should be getting their 30% cut off of everything.
We want our 30.
Well, I mean, they had a sign-up button inside the app, and I think that was the big point of contention. Although Apple, according to Microsoft, they offered to take it out and Apple refused, which sounds funny. But I think all that was put in place originally because Apple's instinct was that if we allow this, every app will suddenly become free. We'll be hosting them all for free, and developers will shift all money-making ventures outside the App Store, and then we'll just be running it at a loss. So they put this in place to kind of guard that 30%, but they didn't take into account all of these edge cases, and a lot of those have come back to bite them now.
Yeah. See, and this is sort of it sort of fits into Office for iOS, because Microsoft has a really nice broad plan for Office, almost as though it's a totally separate mobile product from anything else they're doing in phones and tablets, where if you subscribe to Office 365, you essentially get access to Office wherever you are, however you're doing it. You could actually, if you own a copy of Office for Windows, you can just sit down at pretty much, and you have an Office 365 subscription, you can pretty much sit at any Windows machine, any Windows 7 machine, anywhere, log into your Office account, and it will stream Microsoft Office to that brand new computer without you having to do a full download install or anything. So if Microsoft really wants to leverage all of the advantages they put into Office in the past year and a half, they're going to have to settle this issue early on, because Office 365 could be a huge source of revenue, and they're not particularly interested in giving Apple 30% of everything they ever make on this product. And unfortunately, like Renee said, Apple's intentions were to prevent developers from trying to get around the 30% payment. But in the process, they also make it very, very difficult for people to offer legitimate services outside of the ecosystem, where it seems as though in these cases, Apple's trying to get 30% of a sale that they're not entitled to. So I hope they solve this, because Microsoft Office is still in what the Beatles catalog was to the iTunes store. I think Microsoft Office is to the App Store. It's that one thing that, as soon as we get this, that's the one big hole that's left in this catalog that needs to be filled in.
Yeah,
because I mean, it's a huge thing. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I liked Surface so much, the Surface RT tablet, the ability to run a real version of Microsoft Office for those large collaborative projects that you can't seem to get away from when you decide to, you know, work with other humans on this planet. It's
work
such
with
a
adults.
Exactly. It's such a cool thing to work with an app like that on a nice lightweight 12-hour tablet. That if and when that comes to the iPad, that's going to be a huge, huge shift forward for everybody.
This is from Mac Rumors. The image that leaked out on the Microsoft support site, since been taken down. Office Mobile for iPhone, Excel for iPad, PowerPoint for iPad. So those. I think that was just an accidental publish, and it's been pulled down. So I think it's real.
I can't wait for all the tech support questions. I was using Office on my iPhone, and it disappeared. God. The stream ended. It said the connection was unavailable.
Hey, let's take a break. Come back with your tips and picks of the week. Our show today brought to you by our friends at audible.com. This is a great place to go for audiobooks. I listen to audiobooks all the time. I'm a big audiobook fan, and Audible has over 100,000 titles. Pretty much everything that comes out these days comes out in audiobook on Audible, and that's really great. All the big bestsellers. If you are interested in history, Audible's fantastic. Did you see the movie Lincoln, based on this book, which I've read and I loved? Actually, I guess I should say listened to on Audible. Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln, was an amazing, amazing book. Good fiction, too. Science fiction. Every category, even young adults and kids. Audible.com. Now, here's how you can get a book free. Just go to audible.com/MacBreak, and you will get, you'll be signing up for the Gold Plan. That's a book a month. Your first month's free. Your first book's free. Cancel at any time. Pay nothing, and you still get to keep the book. But we always like to hear some picks from Andy, because the problem is choosing that first book. What do you like these days, Andy?
I'm currently going through. I rarely pick novels, only because I I don't have a lot of patience for them for some reason. And so I hit upon this really cool mystery series by Donald Westlake. It's called The Hot Rock, which is the first in a series of novels starring a jewel thief called Dortmunder. And if you imagine a movie made in 1972 starring Robert Redford as the affable but sometimes failure prone Dortmunder, you know that this is a very, very cool comic jewel heist movie. It's not one where people get shot in the face every three pages and body parts get left by the roadside. It's where the opening chapter is our hero getting out of jail and in the process, the fact that the warden is giving him a handshake with a very, very wet hand means he can't collect the $300 he had arranged to collect from another inmate on his way out the door. And so it's funny, it's tense, it's gripping. Great characters. He assembles the rogues gallery of the usual people he worked with. Every single one who has a certain idiosyncrasy. And also it's a good clever book. It's like you read this. Often a lot of really good like crime thrillers, in the back of your head you're thinking, if I ever were to become a criminal, I would try to steal cars with medical license plates because you can park them just about anywhere. That's a good idea. Great tip, Dortmunder.
There's some great pleasure in starting a series on Audible because then you know you have many more. I think there's at least 13, 14 Dortmunder books. So it's great because it means you're beginning a long journey that won't end, and you don't want these to end. That's one of the things that audiobooks are so great. You get engaged, involved, and you're listening. Sometimes you'll drive around the block a few extra times. You'll sit in the driveway because you don't want to get out of the car. Here, try it, audible.com/MacBreak. And we do have a free book for everybody, even existing Audible members, that fantastic book by Sanderson. Brandon Sanderson's Legion is still available free if you haven't got it yet. It's a novella. Loved it. At audible.com/Sanderson, S-A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. Not an Audible member? Join today. Free for the first month. And I think Hot Rock would be a great. See, this is the problem I have with you, Andy. You get me started on these things, and I have a backlog now. Better to have a backlog than no log at all.
Exactly.
Audible.com/MacBreak. Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
This is a fun. I love these little photo apps that do one really curious thing, but they do it in such an interesting way that it's fun. This is an app called Clone Camera for iOS, and the point of this app is to sort of merge together multiple photos into one shot. So what you can do is I've got it set up right here. So, for instance, start off with one photo right here, click, and then either holding the camera as steady as possible or at least putting it on a tripod, you then move your subjects around and take another shot, hopefully, again, lining things up as well as you can, click, and then once you're done, you move forward, and now all you got to do is I moved the squirrel from one place to another. All I have to do is sort of outline, here is where Mr. Squirrel is. I'm doing this very, very fast. So if this turns out looking really, really lousy, you know that this is performance anxiety, nothing more. But once you've said, here's something that I've moved from one place to another, it could be anything. It could be human beings, whatever. And so now that I'm done, and what it's doing right now is compositing those two, and the result is,
there's two squirrels.
I've got... Yeah. So you can do cool things like just, you know.
That's actually really cool.
Have your kid like at 40 different places at Disney World. go to the bank, withdraw like one single bundle of 20s, and then like sort of like pile them up amongst your office with multiple exposures, make people think you actually have $800,000 in cash. That's how much money you made off of your last app. And then, of course, you can do effects, and then you can save it there. But There are two different kinds of weird camera apps like this that I really, really like. One of them is where it lets you do a photographic effect that makes you really do photography really, really well, and it's wonderful. This is the sort of thing where you're at the bus stop, you're waiting for the airport shuttle, you don't know if the thing's coming, and so you wind up playing around with this camera app to do this. So here's I'm going to take a picture in which the entire street is just filled with red sports cars. Because every time a red car comes by, I'm going to take a picture and add that to the picture. And by the time your shuttle finally comes 40 minutes late, you've got this picture where it's just this fleet of red everywhere. And you've managed to distract yourself from the anger that I told the car service to pick me up at 3 p.m. It's now 4 p.m. and it's dark and cold and scary.
But you don't care because you're happy.
You don't care. Exactly. You managed to distract yourself from visions of mayhem. Only $1.99. It's a lot of fun for $1.99.
I think it sounds great. I'm going to get it. That's great. Clone camera by PETA Vision. And Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week this week.
My pick of the week is Twitterific 5. It was just released last week. It has already been updated once. It is the original granddaddy of all Twitter clients. It was out before the original App Store came out. It's been updated almost every year since then. The last version is just incredibly well designed. It's very slick. It's got a black on black theme from David Laham and Gedeon Mejia. It looks beautiful. It's one of the fastest apps I've ever used. It's Star Wars blast door closing fast when you start using it. And it's absolutely gorgeously done, just the way you'd expect from the Icon Factory.
Wow. That's great. It's funny because Twitter really doesn't want anybody to do these. And yet, Tapbots and Icon Factory and Andrew Stone just keep doing great Twitter clients.
Well, they're lucky because they have a lot of user tokens still.
They're grandfathered in, yeah.
Yeah, so they have two times their user base as of the new Twitter API rules. So they're okay for a little while. It seems like Twitter is content to slowly strangle them to death rather than kill them outright.
Well, support them. It's only $2.99. It's well worth it. I love Twitterific. Is the upgrade free if you already have Twitterific, or do you have to pay for the upgrade?
No, it is a new app. It has been totally rebuilt, redesigned from the ground up. It is, but it's on sale, so you get, in effect, upgrade pricing whether you owned it before or not.
That's a good deal. That's a good deal. Great pick. I don't have a pick this week, but I will note that there is now a new Yahoo Mail. Just came out today, a new Yahoo Mail app for iPhone and iPod Touch you might want to take a look at. There are also big upgrades for a number of classic iPhone apps. Instagram has a new filter, Willow. But more importantly, a new camera, and they've really changed how the camera works. So if you're an Instagram fan, make sure you do your updates. Well worth it.
And they yanked their support for Twitter cards as well.
And that's the battle going on, which we didn't talk about today, but we'll talk about a lot tomorrow on Twig, I'm sure, is the battle between Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter rages on.
But if you use an app like Tweetbot, you still get the Instagram embeds.
Right, yeah. Right. So another reason to use an app for as long as they'll let you. And another reason for them to not let you, unfortunately. Just, you know, whatever happened to the customer comes first. That's what I want.
There was this thing I was saying on Twitter where Instagram wants eyeballs on their website. Twitter doesn't want eyeballs on third-party clients. And no one seems to really care what the eyeballs want.
Yeah, the eyeballs are just eyeballs. They're not people. Sad. Renee is great. iMore.com. That's where you should go to find out whatever, anything that's going on in the Mac world, the iPod world. They know. An iPhone, iOS, iMore.com. Andy Iannacco writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. That's where you'll find his byline, but he's also great. He does a great podcast, Andy Iannacco's Almanac for the 5x5 Network. And his blog is at www.cwob.com. When can people listen to you do the Almanac?
We usually record it live on Tuesday mornings, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at 5x5.tv.
Tuesday mornings, 11 p.m., 11 a.m.
A.m., yes. I think that this Thursday we're talking about Groundhog Day, which is my favorite version of a Christmas carol ever made for movies.
So that means you're going to do it in an hour?
Thursday.
Over and over
Thursday.
Again.
Okay. Yeah, over and over again. I love Groundhog Day. I love it. All right, guys. Hey, thank you so much. We thank you for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. So join us here. Live is always best because then you can be in the chat room and enjoy the fun. But if you can't, don't worry. We've got on-demand versions in audio and video available after the fact. All you have to do is go to twit.tv or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe. That way you get it every week. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.